This is the Fred or Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD, online at WFMD.com, keyword faith. Our sponsors are Hi-Lo Auto Sales, online at HiLoAutoSales.com, and Tire Pros of Frederick. I'm Troy Skinner. On the show this week, we have Bernie Beal with Great Commission Families. His organization is online at GCFamilies.org. Bernie is founder, along with his wife, Linda. And Tim May, you might know that name. Tim is the pastor of Pleasant View Church of the Brethren in Jefferson, and of course, he is the host of Mid-Maryland Live, or co-host with Frank Mitchell, here on WFMD, Monday through Friday from 3 till 6. And if you're not sure which one is Tim and which one is Frank, Tim's a good-looking one.
Tim is right, Frank is wrong.
Yeah, there you go. So last week we were talking about statues and national anthem controversy a little bit. We didn't get into that too much. We ended up talking a lot more about the Confederate flag and that sort of stuff.
Sure.
And statues and things like that. But as part of that conversation, we had some loose ends that I said, we're going to talk about that maybe next week, and we're going to get to that. But before we do, I want to set the stage for this week's conversation by reading something that it's a family operation. One of the things that I love about Great Commission Families is it's a family ministry. The entire family participates, including Bernie's daughter, Sarah, who wrote something a few years ago that's posted on their website that I think really ties into what we're talking about during these arc of programs that we're doing. Since we do not have a perfect citizenry, anarchy, to state the obvious, will not work. And God has not instituted a civil theocracy, so we cannot even attempt to set one up without grossly abusing power. So we are left seeking an unhappy medium, attempting to somehow make sense and societal peace out of the absurdity of man ruling man. We cannot grant absolute power to a single man or to a group of men, whether oligarchy, democracy, or republic, but we have to grant some power, or there will be anarchy, the consequent power vacuum, and the inevitability of something filling that vacuum. This seems to be the very dilemma that faced the founders of America, and somehow they managed to create a decent compromise with our Constitution. But it was not a perfect solution. How could it be? They could not create a perfect citizenry, and they could not institute a perfect theocracy. They were left to attempt a less than perfect compromise, granting mortal rulers some power, because an anarchic society will not function, but binding those rulers with the chains of a constitution, delineating the limits on power so that there can be no free exercise of absolute power, because tyranny destroys a people. And that's the kind of stuff you can find at gcfamilies.org. And I'm going to put in a plug now. We ended last week's show with a plug. I'm going to put in a plug now. Bernie does all sorts of tours. The whole family is involved. But Bernie's the guy I know the best, so I'm going to talk mostly about my experience with Bernie. If you want to go downtown D.C. and learn about the monuments and the history of all that's going on in downtown D.C., contact Bernie at Great Commission Families and set up a tour. If you want to go on a C&O Canal tour, if you want to go on the various battlefields of the area, tour there, not just to learn the history of America or Maryland and that sort of thing, but also how the Bible fits into that, how Christianity influenced some of that sort of thing. It's fascinating. So if you have visitors coming in from out of town, call Bernie, set up a tour. If you're responsible for setting up social outings with your church, perhaps you're leading a youth group and you want to do something like that, contact Bernie. And I don't know, it's like 4 or 5 cents a person. No, it's a little bit of an exaggeration, but he's cheap. I'm telling you, cheap. In fact, he was so cheap that a couple years ago I said, Bernie, what are you doing here? Your ministry's going to go bankrupt. Start charging some money, for crying out loud. So I think he's up to a couple of bucks. I don't know what he's up to now, but it's the bargain of the century. So last week he had to pay Tim some money, I think. This week he's got to pay.
Or other way around.
Me some money.
Yeah. No, that's right. I can't remember. That's right.
And the emphasis is, as constantly as I share history, I love history, but I'm an evangelist. I'm a Christian minister, so I say repeatedly, and that reminds me of a Bible verse. Then I'll give a spiritual lesson. I've got a massive list, top 40 monuments in D.C., top 40 statues in the Capitol. I probably have over 200 spiritual lessons from all these different places, and no one's ever heard them all at once. I think that would be too much, but I'm ready for all of them at any time.
Now, I teased last week talking about the American flag and the Maryland flag. We didn't do a whole lot of that, and I want to make sure we do that this week. But before we do, I got to tie up a loose end from last week. Tim went down a related topic, but a bit of a rabbit trail, and I commented briefly on it and said, you know, we'll talk about that more maybe in next week's show. And guess what? It's next week's show. We're talking about civic symbols being displayed whether it be statues or flags, American flag, right. American flag, a state flag, whatever, in sanctuaries at churches, or maybe anywhere on church property for that matter. I'm not sure how far where you draw the line. But Tim's not a fan of that, right. And he and I are of some like mind on that. I might be a little firmer than he is on some of this stuff. I'm not sure.
We'll find out.
Why don't you finish your
my thought. I appreciate that choice, and gives me an opportunity to explain that I do love the flag of the country. I think it's beautiful. I like what it stands for. I have served under that flag. So don't misinterpretate, that's a word for you, what I'm saying regarding the flag. But its place in the sanctuary I don't like it. I don't approve of it. If I have the power to do so, it's not the place for the flag. The flag, the sanctuary should be dedicated and should be there to serve the gospel of Jesus Christ. And although we're in this country and everything, which I certainly appreciate, we pray for the country every week, I just do not think the sanctuary or the church is really a place for that. If there is a meeting hall and you wish to have that, you got to think next choice. What about standing and saying the pledge to the flag? What about putting your hand on the Bible and taking an oath to testify? So there's our faith denomination has very clear guidelines on what we feel is the proper way to do these things.
This is a bit of a pop quiz question, so it might not be fair. You might know, because you have no idea this question is coming, Bernie. But if anybody might know the answer to this sort of trivia question, when did it become popular? Was it from the get-go, or did it come along later on where American, United States churches started prominently placing the flag in the sanctuary? Do you happen to know the answer to that by any chance?
Not in the sanctuary. Interestingly enough, it wasn't until during the Civil War that the flag got more prominent. Like now you drive around, you see flags over top of a car dealership, flags everywhere. If you have visitors, especially from Europe, that drive around and you ask them, what are your impressions about America? Mm-hmm. One thing they will likely say, if they feel bold enough, why do you have the U.S. flag so many places? So it kind of began after the Civil War, continued through mostly the wars caused that, World War I, World War II. So going into the sanctuary, there was a sense of the civil religion. But no, I don't know when.
Okay, but
I do know this. In flag protocol, it's very interesting. The U.S. flag is always over top of any state flag, with the notable exception of Texas. They're allowed to be side by side. And the flag protocol is the Christian flag is never subservient to the U.S. flag either. So if you put it in your sanctuary, it's not because the national flag is over the Christian flag. And even to have a Christian flag is kind of a I don't know who decided where that flag came from.
And these symbols are important.
Sure,
but I think kind of like words themselves, words are a collection of symbols that we assign a meaning.
Yeah,
and that meaning can drift and change. I mean, years ago you could say gay and mean something completely different than somebody who says gay today means. Or if you're in England and you say, FAG, I'm not sure if I can say that on the radio, they mean something completely different than we would mean. They mean a cigarette.
Right. Cigarette butt, that's all it means to them.
But here it means something different. Even the dreaded N-word has a different acceptability.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago compared to now, I think it's taken on increasing derogatory meaning over time as it's associated with all of the ills that have been perpetrated upon a particular segment of our population. So same with the symbols, the typical things we think of as symbols. There was a time when Christmas trees were a really clever way of taking pagan celebrations and Christianizing them for a purpose. I know some people, in fact, I've done it in my family, where jack-o'-lanterns are turned into object lessons for Christianity and the gospel. There are opportunities to make use of these symbols around us and assign meaning. But over time, I don't know that anybody really thinks about what a Christmas tree is supposed to mean, or anybody really thinks about a jack-o'-lantern and what it could mean.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we've begun in our society now to lose track of what all the symbols assigned to our flags really mean. So let's talk about a particular area of expertise for you, Bernie. Let's talk about the Maryland state flag and some of the symbols that are attached to it that we as Marylanders, for the most part, have completely forgotten. What are some Christian attachments to the Maryland flag?
Well, I wrote a gospel flyer, as you know, about the Maryland state flag, and my subtitle is "The Most Beautiful Flag in the Union is an Illustration of the Greatest Need in the Universe." Because as you look at it, it's a busy flag. The University of Maryland has four school colors because there's four colors in the Maryland flag. Now, two of them are black and white, but red and gold And it's two flags. You look at it and you say, well, it looks like they combined two flags. Well, that's exactly right. But they went back to in the 1630s when George Calvert came to his king, King James I of England. You've probably heard of his Bible. George Calvert had been the ambassador to, I believe it was Spain, a very Catholic country. And in England, you could not be in the Privy Council if you were Catholic. And while George Calvert was in Spain, he was influenced by Catholic priests, and he became Catholic personally. Went back to England, and he eventually, because he was good friends with King James I, he eventually confided in him that I've become Catholic. And that meant he was out of the Privy Council. It's kind of like the law of the Medes and Persians. Even the king couldn't change it. Just because the king liked you, if you're Catholic, you can't be in the government at that particular time. But King James I said, but I want to do some things for you. Essentially, he said that. Because I like you, I'm going to give you a title, Lord Baltimore. I'm going to give you a castle, Castle Baltimore. And I'm going to, you'll get the rights of heraldry, and you get to make a family crest, a personal family crest. The Maryland flag is a flag representation of that family crest. George Calvert and the Calvert side of the family colors, like people had family colors in those days, were black and gold. And so the actual imagery of looks a little bit like a checkered flag. It's supposed to be palisades or like a post of a fort up and down, and then a sash going across it. So if you look at it, it's not... It's an angled black and gold, and that's like a sash going across a man's chest so he can carry a sword, because George Calvert fought for his king. Now, he only fought politically, but that just shows that he was fighting for his king. And his mother's name was Crossland, and they also had family colors and family emblem. And that, of course, is a cross, red and white. And so this cross is a very special cross. It's a Catholic cross. It's a four-armed cross. It's called a botany cross. Botany meaning buttons. So it's four arms, and at the tip of the four arms, it has three little circles representing buttons, or you know, emblematic of buttons.
And it's part of the family crest, but that is a distinctly Christian symbol on the Maryland state flag.
Yes, the four arms cross is to represent that the four gospels should go to the four corners of the earth. And what is the four gospel, or what is the gospel contained in the four gospels? The three buttons symbolize it's God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. Frankly, it was a crusader's cross. A Catholic cross.
Maybe more of a Christian flag than the Christian flag.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But to honor both sides of your family in heraldic imagery, you wouldn't put one over top of the other or one side by side, which one comes first. You would quarter it. And there is a slight supremacy of the first and fourth quadrant, but that's what you do in correct heraldry. Maryland is the only state flag that has correct heraldry in it.
Explain that, Bernie.
Every other state flag, it has some imagery that's indigenous to America.
Okay.
Well, this goes back to George Calvert's personal family crest, which was then used in the Maryland seal, and Maryland didn't have, like, everybody didn't have flags. The Baltimore colors, the black and gold, tended to be the Maryland colors, and that's the Baltimore City flag, for instance, has the black and gold only with a monument in the middle. But in the run-up and the action of the Civil War, Maryland raised regiments for both sides, mostly North. And so they decided, you know, the people at the time, black and gold, well, that's Maryland for the North. But if you were in Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia, but if you were from Maryland, you would probably have pinned on your shirt somewhere a botany cross showing that you were from Maryland, but you're fighting for the South. And then after the war, the great need in America, in Maryland, was reconciliation. Remember I said the subtitle? This flag represents the greatest need in the universe, reconciliation. And so after former Confederate soldiers and former Union soldiers reconstituted the Maryland National Guard units, and you know everybody took the oath of loyalty, you know, so everybody's Americans now, part of the Union, Maryland National Guard. They got the idea for this flag, where they took the two flags and put them together. And then in Baltimore, I think it was 1888, for the 150th anniversary of the founding of Baltimore, there's a big parade, and Maryland National Guard's there, and they're marching with this, with almost this flag. They actually flipped it. They put the Confederates in the first and fourth quadrant, and the Union in the second and third, because they were mostly Confederates in the newly reformed Maryland National Guard. But the Marylanders saw that, and they saw that's the two emblems of North and South combined to show reconciliation. And it really resonated with the people of Maryland. And within about 20-some years, the Maryland legislature, they made this. They flipped, so the Union was in the first quadrant, slight supremacy. They made that the official Maryland flag. So it symbolizes reconciliation.
It's interesting. There's all this Christian symbolism in the flag, And Christianity, of course, is a Christianity of reconciliation. And then there's this reconciliation theme in the flag as well. So, I mean, there's so much fodder for gospel proclamation in the flag.
And go to the flag staff itself.
Before you touch on that. The person reminding me to ask Bernie about the staff is Tim May. He's pastor at Pleasant View Church of the Brethren in Jefferson, also a host of a moderately popular show, I think.
I would think Monday through
Friday, 3 to 6 on WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner, and this is The Faith Debate, and the other voice you're hearing is that of Bernie Beal with Great Commission Families. So, yeah, in 1945, I think something happened.
Yes, Maryland is the only...
World War II ended.
And... it was the front end. Looking back, we can definitely see it. I'm not sure how much they knew it at the time. It was the front end of the Cold War, where there was two world powers. One, the United States of America, which is based on principles. The revolution that was America, in my way of thinking and expressing it, is that rights do not come from governments or kings. Rights come from God. That's what's stated in the Declaration of Independence, which is foundational and formational for the Constitution. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration goes on to say that governments are instituted among men to protect the rights that God has given. And that phrase, God-given rights, it's just ubiquitous in American political discourse. It's unique in world history, and it was in utter contrast to the Soviet Union, which says there is no God.
Pinko commies.
As I was fond of telling college students, when we do evangelistic training, people are never the enemy. They may be captives in a mindset, may be captives of the enemy, but people are never the enemy. So it's remarkable that today the former Soviet Union has embraced its Christian roots of over 1,000 years into Russia, more so than the typical intelligentsia of America.
So as a result of all of that, the emergence of the beginning of the Cold War on the aftermath, immediate heels of the Second World War, Maryland decided to add something that no other state, I think you told me before the show, no other state has ever done. What is that?
Add an official flagstaff ornament. And so if you drive by a public school, an elementary school in Maryland, if they are flying a Maryland flag, officially they should have on top a botany cross, one of these. It's the same cross that is in red and white in the two quadrants of the Maryland flag, and it's a cross that shows that the four Gospels should go to the four corners of the earth, and the Gospels symbolize by the three buttons on each end of each arm.
All right, so that raises the point of debate now. Yep. This is the faith debate. The two of you, you can take turns, whatever. Somebody who's not a Christian, somebody maybe who's militantly defending a secular view on civic things, is going to say, wait a minute. Bernie Beal just spent like 7 hours detailing all the Christian symbolism in the Maryland flag. And then 72 years ago, Maryland had the audacity to put a Christian cross as the official emblem for the flag. What in the world is going on? Not only do we have to get rid of all those statues of the Confederates, not only do we have to take a knee at the national anthem when the flag is unfurled, but we got to get rid of these Christian symbols in Maryland. And what would we say in response to that as Christians?
Well, it's the question that has been asked. I wish this was just for, hypothetically speaking, but it's not. And you'll see the Maryland General Assembly this year when they come in. There are several bills will be pre-filed on changing the entire state of Maryland flag, which would be, I think, would be horrible in the respect of from whence we came. I could be the devil's advocate in saying that, well, the cross does not represent me if I were, if I'm not a Christian. And I think it would be, it could be even, I guess, go far enough to say it inflames me if I'm not a Christian. I, as a personal opinion, would hope they'd leave it alone. I think those days of political correctness have gone nuts. But I would be able to say, Bernie and Troy, I could understand their point of view. And, I would pray for the outcome on that.
Mm-hmm. Let me share an analogy I learned from one of my favorite authors about American history, a man named Bill Federer. That's kind of to give a footnote, if you will. So I didn't come up with this concept, but I think it's really brilliant. If you go back to the Pilgrims and the Puritans, they came for religious freedom. Actually, they the Pilgrims came to be able to be lights to a lost world. They used the metaphor from Jesus because they already had religious freedom in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. But the Puritans came after them for religious freedom. And you could say they built the boat of liberty. That's the metaphor. They built the boat of liberty for themselves. The joke is that they came to America to worship God the way they wanted to and to make everybody else do the same. At least initially, that's what the Puritans were doing. They were trying to purify the church. So if you're coming into our colony, you got to do it our way. But over time, the boat of liberty got expanded where, okay, you don't have to be just a Puritan. You can be any kind of Protestant Christian. And then you can see how this goes. And then over time, it got expanded. Okay, you don't have to be a Protestant Christian. You can be any kind of Christian. So the Catholics were included. And, of course, that Maryland was the first colony to have actual religious freedom because the boat of liberty now could be any Christian. It wasn't until after the American Revolution, a couple decades after the Revolution, for Jewish people to have religious freedom officially, completely, being able to hold office and that kind of thing. So the boat of freedom got enlarged again. And then the Civil War did the great need that was embedded in the Constitution or the Declaration of the Constitution. It's inevitable, you know, that there needed to be freedom for every person in America. So the boat of liberty got larger and larger and larger. And over time, it's gotten larger. But it's as if in these last generations or last generation or so, the people that have gotten in the boat, they've looked around and said, Christian, what are you doing in the boat? Get out of the boat. So the people who built the boat, compared, we don't have a perfect history, but compared to what's going on in the rest of the world, it is amazing how the boat of liberty has been a blessing to all. George Washington got a letter when he was president from a Jewish synagogue, I believe it was in Georgia, saying, what's going to happen to us now? That's not exactly how they said it, but they were just, a little concerned. And he wrote back a beautiful letter essentially saying there is no place on earth that you should be more safe than the United States of America. The boat of liberty has gotten enlarged, but remember who built the boat. So if you remove the symbols of those who built the boat, you're then on the law of unintended results that could lead to a type of tyranny that, we can't imagine the future. But let's at least understand the past in a way that looks at it honorably and honestly.
Good stuff from Bernie Beale at Great Commission Families, online at Great Commission Families, or gcfamilies.org. Tim May is with Pleasant View Church of the Brethren in Jefferson, also here, of course, at WFMD in the afternoons, Monday through Friday. I'm Troy Skinner. I want to thank our sponsors, Hilo Auto Sales, online at HiloAutoSales.com, and Tire Pros of Frederick. We will do this again in 167 and a half hours. Until then, thank you so much for listening. Have a great week. God bless.